remember as a young student, you know, trying to figure out how did people get basically drawn in by Hitler? How did that happen? And I'd watch newsreels and I'd see this guy standing up there ranting and raving and people shouting and raising their arms. I thought, what's happened to these people? Why did they believe that? I think it was difficult for most Americans to believe that this guy would be as dangerous as he turned out to be. And it's no longer just the whiff of violence, but the appeals to violence. Look at immigration. They don't want to get together and try to resolve this issue. They don't want to try to figure out how we have secure borders because they'd rather have an issue than a solution. This is an attack on freedom, on democracy, on truth. This is an attack that has ripple effects for all of us. The threats to democracy are real, and the only way to defeat them is showing up and voting.
Is the Rubin Report. I'm Dave Rubin, and I did not kill myself. Let me repeat, I did not kill myself. It's April 3rd, 2024. For those of you listening on the audio podcast, that was audio of Hillary Clinton, of course, with video, a little B-roll of Joe Biden genuflecting, angry, hands shaking, being confused, all of that stuff. And we are going to talk today about Joe Biden and the future of America and this election we got coming up and some of the options laid out in front of us, all with the backdrop of that other war that's going on, because most people are at least to some degree focused on the Middle East situation. But we did have that big Ukraine-Russia thing. Remember that we were all talking about for about a year, and then that thing has sort of taken the back seat. But I want to get you caught up on what's going on with Ukraine and Russia and how that's relevant not only to our economic situation here, but to our borders and widely what's going on with the woke, because these things, although they seem disconnected in a lot of ways, I actually think they are quite connected. So let's just get right into it. Why not? Huh? And we'll talk about the climate change too, because they also want that to take control of your life. A guy by the name, a filmmaker by the name of David Holthouse, was on Joe Rogan's show yesterday. He's a filmmaker. He's done a couple different documentaries, Cockfight, Stalking the Boogeyman, a bunch more. And he recently went to Ukraine to try to figure out if he could do a doc that was going to make sense about what was going on in Ukraine. We're going to show you a couple clips here, and that'll set us up for today's show.
But what was I doing in Ukraine? I'm looking into a possible documentary that would be set against the backdrop of the current war, but that would be more about like what is actually the true nature of corruption in Ukraine and what has it been and what was it in the 90s, you know?
Yeah.
And what is it today? And like, how has the U.S. State Department kind of f***ed up again in the same way that we did in Vietnam and every war, like Vietnam, Afghanistan, Iraq, by backing the wrong horses, you know?
Yeah. Well, we've never not up.
Yeah.
There's never been one. Well, whether it's Libya or Afghanistan, Iraq, there's not one where you could point to like, we nailed that one.
Right.
There's not one.
Right.
There's not one.
Right.
And, you know, when there was so much resistance to the concept that Ukraine was corrupt when we first started backing them, you know, that was what was fascinating to me, because it was always talked about how corrupt Ukraine was. It was always talked about. And then all of a sudden, this was a foreboding topic. Like, no, Russia is the aggressor and the invader, and Ukraine are their angels. And they're like, wait a minute, you know, that's not reality. Like,
okay, so let's be clear about something. Russia is the aggressor and the invader, right? They invaded a sovereign nation. They have their own disputes about territory and all of those things, but they did invade a sovereign nation. That's one thing to just put aside for a second. But the reason we're showing you that is because if you remember before this Russia invasion and the Ukraine war and all that, yes, people used to talk about Ukraine corruption, right? There was, say a certain crackhead that's the son of the president of the United States who is getting $80,000 a month to be a consultant for a Ukrainian energy company, despite being a crackhead and having no expertise. So there was an awful lot there, right? We know about Joe Biden making sure that the prosecutor was fired when he was vice president, all of the nonsense around Ukraine. There's something that doesn't quite seem right with people. And yes, we've butchered a whole bunch of military operations across the world. And oddly, the Ukraine one, the weird thing about that was we got out of Afghanistan. People were like, why were we there for 20 years? It was a horrible withdrawal, but most people did not feel we should be there anymore. And within months, we were involved in another military adventure without really a clear outcome or anything else. And that's fairly obvious in that we're still in this thing. We're in a war, not war. We haven't declared war. We're paying for the war. We're paying for pensions of Ukrainian government employees, et cetera, et cetera. But he went there to figure out the true nature of the corruption. Because for most people, this does feel a little bizarre. Like, what are we doing there? Can Ukraine win a war against Russia and Putin, which have nukes and all of that? It just, something doesn't feel right to a lot of people. And then they continued to talk about how suddenly we all had to be on the Ukraine side of things. We all had to have the blue and yellow flag. And it was extremely important that we all hate Russia and vodka.
I think that the war in Ukraine could have been prevented. I think that there was this false dichotomy where there were forces in the U.S. government, and this is part of the documentary I want to make, is about that forced you. There was like, you either have to be, you know, a puppet of Russia or our puppet. You have to either have to be NATO or going to, there's no middle ground.
Right.
When in fact, I think that Ukraine could have been a bridge, a peaceful bridge between Russia and the quote unquote West, where maybe it could have joined the European Union economically, free trade, but not joined NATO, right? Because that's what Putin was so adamant against. And you understand, I mean, I think he's a war criminal, power mad, you know, asshole, right? But you can sort of see from his perspective, if you look at a map and you start to see all these NATO countries around Russia, you kind of see, you know, what motivates him.
Well, that's what people in the State Department had always said, that was his red line.
Okay, so that's an important point, because it's very easy to say, okay, Putin's just awful and he's evil and blah, 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 and he kills, quite literally kills political opposition and all of that. Like, we can do all that. But the reality is, as Ukraine got closer to entering NATO, right, Russia was looking around going, boy, you know, we've got all of these countries kind of on our border. And once you're in NATO, if there's a conflict with one, there's a conflict with all. So Russia kind of jumped the gun and invaded Ukraine. You may not like it. That's what the rationale was, right? And of course, Putin sort of wants Mother Russia back. He wants sort of the return of the USSR. But again, the question really is, what is the United States doing there? And again, we have not declared war. There's been no voting on this in the House. We're just funding this thing. At some point, if you are endlessly funding a war, it seems to me that you're actually in it. But really, what are the motivations? And this is the clip that'll set us up for the rest of the show. What are the motivations within our government as it pertains to this Ukraine situation?
His red line was Ukraine.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then when they're trying to get Ukraine to join NATO, it's like, what are we doing?
Right.
What are we doing? We bring in about World War III, and why? And how much money is being spent?
Right.
And where's that money going?
Right.
Yeah. And who's got a vested interest in keeping that money flowing?
Yeah.
And that's where it gets scary.
Right. That's what I'm looking into. And I don't want to tip my hand too much, but I think I've got pretty convincing evidence that the U.S. Department of Justice has been used by the U.S. State Department to further U.S. foreign policy interests in Ukraine in ways that aren't really like right. Like bringing criminal charges against people in the U.S., but like Ukrainians, like charging them with crimes in the U.S., including some people that have never even set foot in the United States, charging with crimes or getting them out of trouble, like dropping criminal charges against them to sort of like, and again, it goes back to like our designating, you're a good guy, you're a bad guy. You know, you're corrupt, you're not, even though they're both just grabbing, you know, billions with both hands. So
it's a scary time, man. It really is.
Yeah.
It is a scary time. There is a lot of weird energy in the world, but that clip is what will, as I said, set us up for the rest of the show, because there are interests here in the United States that have us doing all of these things. There wasn't a lot of interest in the United States after we wrapped up Afghanistan to go and fight Russia, right? Again, a war that hasn't been declared. So we're in a not declared or an undeclared war at the moment. So what would those interests be that are pushing us towards this endless conflict with a guy with nukes, do you think it might be related to some of the things that have been happening domestically here? And do you think it might involve some big corporations making some big money? Do you think so? I think it might be possible. I'll tell you about that after we talk about the wellness company. Guys, the fact that on Thursday, March 21st, the court ruled that the FDA must delete every social media post addressing the use of ivermectin for treatment or prevention of COVID-19. It's been determined that the FDA lied in their demonizing of ivermectin and other effective drugs for the last 4 years, vindicating doctors like Dr. Peter McCullough, who stood strong despite every cancellation campaign. But the question so many people are still asking is, okay, but how do I get ivermectin or HCQ? Most doctors still won't even consider prescribing it. Keep listening. Americans are waking up and understanding that now more than ever, we need to have these life-saving medications on hand. They aren't just remedies, they're lifelines for the next time. Because there will be a next time, and the wellness company's Contagion Emergency Kit has you covered. The only of its kind, this prescription emergency kit provides you with carefully selected assortment of effective medications for COVID-19 and other respiratory illnesses, ivermectin, HCQ, Z-Pak, Budesonide, along with a nebulizer so you can rest easy knowing that you have emergency meds on hand, along with a guidebook for safe use, backed by research and endorsed by experts like Dr. Peter McCullough and Dr. Harvey Risch. The wellness company's Contagion Emergency Kit is a must-have. Avoid the chaos, wait times, and price of a hospital visit and have exactly what you need for as low as the cost of a single doctor's visit. Go to twc.health/Rubin and grab your Contagion Emergency Kit right now. That's twc.health/Rubin. Code Rubin saves you $45 at checkout. Kits are available only in the U.S. of A. And now back to me. Okay, so, you know, I don't spend a ton of time doing the Russia-Ukraine war thing because I think it is very hard to understand. I think there's so many huge domestic problems, and I think people get lost in a lot of conspiracy stuff with it. But the reason I want to do the show and set it up the way we just did is because I think you can see a direct correlation between the corruption in Ukraine and a lot of what's happening in the United States right now. So here we've got some info from the Daily Wire. JP Morgan Chase signed an agreement with the Ukrainian government in the hopes of coordinating between $20 billion and $30 billion in funds to rebuild the war-torn country. Senior officials from the largest bank in the United States met last week in Kiev and other major cities with Ukrainian President Zelensky and his staffers, according to a report from Fox Business. On the eve of the Super Bowl, executives from JP Morgan Chase provided the head of state with a New England Patriots jersey emblazoned with the number 91, signifying the year Ukraine gained independence from the Soviet Union. So this Putin fella, he wants to take that independence away. That's just a move that he's trying to make. Ukraine doesn't really want it. But the broader point here is that, okay, so JP Morgan now has business to do in Ukraine. Ukraine largely destroyed because of this war. Well, you've got to rebuild it. So are there giant banks, giant corporations that are going to come in and do it? And if that's the case, then is there some coordination between, I don't know, the military industrial complex that goes in and blows things up, and then all of the corporations that go in and make a ton of money in the reconstruction? I think you can see a similar thing happening, actually, when we get to the post-Israel-Hamas war, a similar thing happening in Gaza. There will be a ton of money to be made in the rehabilitation of Gaza, regardless of who's in charge of it. So it doesn't matter what your position on Ukraine and Russia is, or if you think Ukraine should be part of Russia, or if you think Putin is horrible. The question that I'm trying to pose today is, why are we so heavily involved? Well, I think we have some evidence for that, because it's not just JP Morgan, of course, that's going to be involved in the rebuilding. It's also BlackRock. And here is Larry Fink, CEO, talking about some of BlackRock's policies. And I think you'll see how it's connected to some of the things happening here in the United States.
Assets are now back to $10 trillion. Now, what was interesting, I mean, I follow your assets, you know,
because
that's what nerdy business journals like me do. So I believe it went in 2022.
Yes.
As low as 8.5 trillion.
Yep.
It starts creeping up and you're back to 10 trillion.
Yes.
Is ESG back? I mean, is this because of,
No, Charlie.
I know you hate those letters, but I mean, you know.
No, I mean, the fact that I believe is so important for our shareholders to understand and our clients to understand. In the last 5 years, clients awarded us $1.9 trillion of new money. This is not market movements. Forget about markets go up, markets go down. We were awarded $1.9 trillion of more mandates. And that is across clients worldwide. That's clients in the pension fund community. It's in wealth management. It's insurance companies. No firm has been awarded this scale of assets.
As someone like me who looks at trends,
wouldn't you say that's an incredible
trend? It is
incredible,
and I won't use the word the letters ESG, but it's sustainable coming back after taking a lot of knocks.
If we want to take the subset of sustainability out, it's growing. It never went away.
Okay.
The reality is, if there's a fundamental reason in doing this, and when I spend time with governmental officials worldwide, they want to find more independence of their energy position. A country like India that's growing 8% a year, the energy demand to grow at 8% a year is tremendous. They need to be investing in wind and solar, and the amount of capital they're going to need is enormous.
Okay, so there were two reasons I wanted to show you that clip. First off, he is in charge of BlackRock, which will be involved heavily in rebuilding Ukraine. So again, if the government goes in and blows apart Ukraine, or has Russia blow apart Ukraine, or Russia does it independently, someone makes money on the other side, right? So JP Morgan's going to throw all of these billions, and they'll get plenty of it back. They're involved too with BlackRock, et cetera, et cetera. The other thing, the other reason that I wanted to show you that clip is, it's interesting how even the interviewer, when he mentions ESG, they know what a terrible word it is, or what a terrible phrase it is now, right? Like, the idea of pushing all of this diversity nonsense into all of these corporations, it's the same thing as DEI, and Fink is like, oh, we don't want anything to do with that anymore. I think that's a beautiful thing. And I would say Chris Rufo and many others deserve a lot of credit for exposing that nonsense. But the reason I'm showing that clip really is because I'm showing you that we've established, I think, a blueprint here. The government seems to manufacture crises, then exploit them, and then let huge corporations profit off them. And you can just see that from COVID, from Ukraine, and of course now what's happening at our border. I want to show you a video. This is from a guy online who goes by Older Millennial. And here he is talking about what BlackRock, again, that was Larry Fink, the CEO of BlackRock, what they are doing in New York as it pertains to illegals.
Y'all want to come with me down another rabbit hole of how the U.S. government is using private industry to f*** over the American people? This is going to be a quick video, but I wanted to put it out because I want to hear what people think. The basic gist is that the United States government is using BlackRock to permanently house all the illegal immigrants they've been letting in. So you know how companies like BlackRock have been buying up large amounts of the single-family real estate? And a shitload of the properties that they bought are in the state of New York. And New York just declared that they're going to pay homeowners there $125 a day to house a migrant. $125 a day per migrant, per bedroom. That means the taxpayers of New York are going to be paying $3,750 per migrant per month. Now think about all those houses that BlackRock bought. Let's say they got a four bedroom. That means they can house four migrants. And at $3,750 per migrant, that means that property would now be bringing in $15,000 a month. And if any of those migrants have a family, that's additional money on top. And BlackRock doesn't have to worry because the money's guaranteed by the government of New York. I mean, you have to think, so far in Biden's presidency, anywhere from 12 to 15 million illegals have crossed over. And then because of all the incentive programs that New York created, if you enter this country illegally, you'd have to be stupid not to go to New York. You're gonna get paid, you're gonna get fed, you're gonna get housed, all for the price of either a bus trip up there, or maybe you can catch one of those flights that Biden's been sending under everyone's radar. But regardless, you're gonna go to New York, where BlackRock owns thousands of homes. And I'd be willing to bet a lot of those homes are about to have an illegal immigrant as a tenant. And they're gonna make sure they get at least one in every bedroom. And I would expect that this continues at least until the census.
Okay, so again, that's a guy by the name, he goes by the handle, Older Millennial. Brock just told me he's absolutely huge on TikTok. Now look, there's a little bit of, it feels like, as he said, a rabbit hole there. But it all kind of makes sense, right? BlackRock is buying these properties all over the place. Then the state of New York is incentivizing people. We will literally pay you money to take bedrooms in your houses. And then you start going, boy, I bought this house, the mortgage on this house, or they buy it in cash, of course, because they have endless amounts of cash. But in essence, you buy a $300,000 house, and then you suddenly are like, wait a minute, I can make $15,000 on this house every month, and I can have this house paid off in 2 years, and then I can have endless cash after that. On top of the fact that the more houses that these corporations buy, the less inventory there is for, say, a young family to get into the housing game, which is really the key to building wealth over the years. Like, get involved, own a house, as opposed to just throwing money away on rentals. So who are these migrants that they are letting into the country? That is also the question, because yeah, if you let in about 7 million people and you don't know who they are, where they're from, some of them, even a small percentage, might be bad people, right? So if it was 10% of 7 million people, that's 700,000 bad people. And let's say that was a little excessive. So if it was 10% of the 700,000, you get the point. Like, we can extrapolate this all the way down. And if you end up only with 10 bad people, it's still a bit of a problem. So we're going to show you some of the craziness that's happening with the illegals right now, because it's wildly out of control. Mainstream media obviously isn't covering it. And we better get a freaking handle on this thing quick. Or, as a certain orange man said a couple years ago, we ain't going to have a country. But first, guys, let me talk to you about Arma. Ever wonder why some people don't get sick? After strengthening my immune system with Armra Colostrum, I'm now one of those people. I haven't taken a day off in a long time. The benefits are truly incredible. Colostrum is the first nutrition we receive in life and is an exclusive source of all the essential nutrients we need in order to thrive. Armra Colostrum is a proprietary concentrate of bovine colostrum that harnesses over 400 functional nutrients to strengthen your immune barriers, your body's inside suit of armor, and first line of defense against harmful particles from the environment that can trigger inflammation and make you sick. It strengthens immunity, ignites metabolism, fortifies gut health, promotes hair growth and skin radiance, and powers fitness and performance recovery. Armra Colostrum TM strengthens all four layers of your gut wall, where 80% of your immune cells are housed. It's a rich, exclusive source of aminoglobulins, which are antibodies that optimize your immune defense during cold and flu season. And their premium grass-fed bovine colostrum concentrate activates cellular health for your resilience and your recovery. In clinical trials, bovine colostrum was found to be at least 3 times more effective at than the flu vaccine at preventing the flu. We've worked out a special offer for my audience. Receive 15% off your first order. Go to tryarmra.com/Dave or enter Dave to get 15% off. That's tryarmra.com/Dave. And now back to me. Okay, so we got a problem here. There are giant corporations buying homes that keeps the average person out of the home. Then the government comes in and says, we will pay you an awful lot of money to put illegals in these homes, even though they shouldn't be here in the first place. That seems like a bit of a problem in and of itself. But we also have a problem because we don't know who these people are or what they are intending to do, except a whole bunch of them are doing a bunch of bad stuff. So first, let's start with a clip from Fox News. This is Bill Malusian, who has been just the number one guy on all of the illegal nonsense for the last 2 years. And check out what's going on with ICE and illegals up in Boston.
You mentioned this, Dana. I'm going to get to it now. An elite immigration team making a major bust, taking down 5 alleged migrant criminals, and they did it while working around sanctuary city policies. Bill Malusian embedded with that team in Boston. He's got the story now. Bill, what you learn? Hello.
Hey, Bill, good morning to you. ICE says because of sanctuary policies here in Massachusetts, illegal aliens charged with heinous crimes are essentially able to roam the streets after release without any notice. And we were with ICE as they took down 4 alleged child rapists and an MS-13 gang member all in a single morning.
Any questions? You can talk to your team later.
It's the pre-dawn hours in Boston.
Kid has a real violent history.
And this elite team of ICE deportation officers is briefing on their target list for the day. Illegal aliens charged with egregious crimes.
All the targets today, every single one of them is an aggravated felony here in the Commonwealth. So these are really the cases that are the worst of the worst here in Massachusetts.
ICE quickly takes down its first target, an illegal alien from Guatemala charged with aggravated child rape.
Carlos Piet.
Minutes later, ICE arrests a Colombian national charged with the rape of a child above age 14.
I don't have enough officers or resources to tackle every one of these public safety threats. Are we going after the child rapist today, or are we going to go after that 2 times deported fentanyl dealer? Because we can't get both.
All right, this is really wild, because child rape is a problem, and sanctuary cities find people who are child rapists and then put them back out on the streets. Of course, this is not happening in other states where there are child rapists or regular rapists or other criminals, right? When we get illegals here in Florida and then we find out that they've been released back onto the street, as you know, we've covered the story a couple times. There was a rapist up in Tampa who got released down the street. Within a half hour, DeSantis had the guy arrested again. This is just a fundamental difference in policy. But in effect, You've got ICE, which is the federal agency dealing with these illegals. They are now at opposition with these sanctuary states and sanctuary cities. They're working against each other. You have sanctuary cities that not only are allowing the people in, giving them resources, giving them housing and the rest of it, but then in essence, when they commit a crime, they're just putting them back out on the street, and then ICE has to try to hunt these people down. We have a bit more from Malusian on how sanctuary cities are trying to work around ICE to exacerbate this problem.
ICE's next arrest, a combative MS-13 gang member from El Salvador, charged with a slew of violent crimes. Officers then arrested this Brazilian man, charged with 5 counts of aggravated rape of a child.
How are you guys not notified about a child rapist being released?
Unfortunately, in Massachusetts, that's how it is with most of these sanctuary jurisdictions.
A short time later, ICE took down their final target, a Brazilian gang member, also charged with child rape.
Just this morning today, 4 accused child rapists and 1 MS-13 gang member. Those are the kind of people you're going after.
That's every day up here in Boston. Those are the public safety threats that we really want to get off the street. It was a great day for the teams. That's 5 public safety threats that are in the community going to go ahead and victimize anyone else.
And ICE says all of those arrests you just saw happened because local authorities ignored their detainer request to keep these guys in custody due to sanctuary policies. ICE says all of those suspects will remain in federal custody until their local charges are resolved. Then ICE will seek to deport every single one of them.
I know this hasn't been our funniest show ever, but the level of insanity here is immeasurable. Why, if someone has been charged with aggravated child rape, would you let them out of jail no matter what, sanctuary city or not? That means, let me just understand this. So if you live in Boston and you're a tax-paying citizen and you aggravatedly rape a child, you will be put in jail. They're not just going to let you out, right? You will be put in jail. You're going to have a trial. They're not just going to let you out between the trial and yet, somehow, if you are illegal and they catch you aggravatingly raping a child, they are going to put you back on the streets. And then ICE has to come in and fix this. This is completely insane. And then the government comes in, takes your tax money, and pays BlackRock to house illegal migrants who, in some cases, are aggravated child rapists. Trying to make that funny somehow. It landed. Anyway, it's not just Boston. Here's what's going on in New York City.
A group of suspected migrants are under arrest this morning after they were discovered squatting in a home where guns and drugs were found. But that's not all. The group, the guns, the drugs were all in the same room as a 7-year-old boy. And now we're seeing for the first time new exclusive video of the moment NYPD showed up. Eyewitness News reporter Phil Tate is live in the Norwood section of the Bronx with more. Phil.
Yeah, well, just last week, police arrested 8 migrants believed to be squatting inside of the basement of this home that you see right here. But it's what investigators would find inside, drugs and multiple weapons, along with a 7-year-old who was playing inside of that same room. Now, let's get straight to some exclusive surveillance video that we just obtained when police sprung into action, hopping out of their squad cars after they got a call about a man with a gun. When they arrived, they chased 24-year-old Hector De Soso Viata, believed to be from Venezuela, into the basement of this Hull Avenue home. Another man, 22-year-old Javier El Borno, tried to get away with another gun before he was also arrested. Playing on your screen now are 4 of the 8 suspects that were under arrest being walked out one by one from police. When a search warrant was in place, investigators recovered 2 more loaded guns, 3 loaded extended magazines, a box of ammunition, and a bag of ketamine mixed with cocaine. Moments ago, we spoke with a neighbor just next door about the landlord and those uninvited guests.
Guns, ketamine, cocaine. Sounds like Hunter Biden's birthday party. But no, this is happening in the basement somewhere in New York City. And there are probably other cases of this. So the real question, by the way, is whose fault is this? How did this happen? There was a certain orange man with funny hair about 8 or 9 years ago who was talking about building a wall and keeping people out and figuring out whether we can have a country or not, because if you don't know who's here, you basically don't have a country. And he was called racist for it. We have a 11-second video of the guy, or the team, let's say, who's come in after the Orange Man. And let's see if their position has been solid over the years.
The border is closed. The border is secure.
The border is secure.
The only reason the border is not secure is Donald Trump and his MAGA Republican friends.
All right, so you got it. That was Mayorkas in 21. That was Kamala in 22. It's secure, it's secure, which, by the way, you guys know they've been telling us this entire time. And then what happened? I mean, this is fully the credit of the online media, right? Like, shows like this started showing these videos and people wandering through the border and just running through, and where are all the women and where are all the old people and where are all the children? It's all 25 to 40-year-old men. Something seems a little bizarre. And now suddenly they're acknowledging that there is a crisis. And also they can't, although they deny reality on every given day, they seem unable to deny the fact, because we know it is a fact now, that about 7 million people have come in 3 years. Here is Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer. She is one of the most authoritarian, crazed progressives in the entire country, who quite literally stopped people from planting seeds in their gardens during COVID. She had no problem while she was locking people in their house, going on a boat for her husband's birthday. Surprise, surprise. I have no doubt that she got plenty of injections in her face and Botox, you'll see in just a second, during COVID and all that, but that's how they roll. That's fine. Here she is blaming Trump. This is yesterday, blaming Trump for the problem at the border now.
I want to tell you, you know, the former president was in Grand Rapids today, and he was capitalizing on a horrible tragedy that happened here. There is a family that is grieving the loss of Ruby Garcia, and she was a real person with a real story, and it is a horrible story that happened. All of that being said, he came in to, perpetrate the continued storyline that he had done everything to keep us safe, which is baloney. We know that under the Trump administration, he actually called me, the governor of Michigan, to ask that we send the National Guard to help with surveillance on the southern border. And we helped him out because he couldn't get it done. He's also the reason that the, you know, negotiation in Washington, D.C. didn't come to fruition. He torpedoed a deal that would have had the strongest border security in decades in this country that President Biden put on the table. He told Republicans to walk away, and they did. So I really, you know, I cannot abide when someone comes in and just tries to score political points off of someone else's pain and perpetuates a problem instead of actually trying to solve it.
Mirror, mirror, lady, get a mirror. Did you see before I get into analyzing what she said, did you see the Chyron? That's the text on the lower third of the screen there that CNN put up. The headline that they were running with as you're listening to Whitmer: Trump pushes fear of immigration on campaign trail. Is that really what Trump's doing? Is that what I'm doing right now? Are we pushing fear of immigration, or are we exposing fear of illegals and drugs and child rapists and a bunch of other stuff? But just the way they subtly frame things in a dishonest way, that's number one. Then, of course, everything she said there was also dishonest. She's like, Trump did nothing about the border. He did call me to ask for help. Well, if he was calling you to ask for help, he was trying to do something. He was also trying to build a wall that you guys were fighting against the entire time. And then she's basically saying, you know, we'd have a secure border right now had Trump not stopped the Republicans from voting for this bipartisan deal. Remember, that was about 6 weeks ago, that bipartisan deal. Except the bipartisan deal was complete nonsense that was going to allow for thousands of people to come in legally every single day. We have every law we need. We have a border. We have people who can secure the border. We don't need new laws. So it might be true. I will try to give the devil, and in this case, I mean it literally when I'm talking about Gretchen Whitmer, I will try to give the devil his due here. It might be true that Trump called up a couple people and said, don't sign this thing, right? He could have called up a couple of Republican senators and don't sign this thing. It'll look like Biden gets a win, but that's irrelevant. If Biden wanted to shut the border down now, he has every means to do it. And by the way, Donald Trump, who potentially could be president this time next year, well, he's vowing to do everything he can to deal with this illegal immigrant fiasco once he's elected.
On day one, I will seal the border and we'll begin the largest domestic deportation operation in the history of our country. And if other countries say they won't take them back, we're not going to take them back. I will say that, here they come. You're just going to hold on to your britches, because here they come. They're coming back.
Okay, so I don't know if he will do that on day one. It would be marshaling all sorts of resources and the largest deportation ever, and it's going to be a lot of work, and you're going to have to figure out, you know, who's been living here peacefully for years and have families and are members of communities, and what do we do about that, and pathway to citizenship. But I do generally believe that when it comes to the squatters and, say, the child rapists and the ketamine cocaine people, that Trump will do a little bit something. But the blueprint we've been talking about so far on the show has been that they create fiascos, right? We create wars here. We create COVID situations here. We create a border crisis here. And of course, what's the big one for these people? Because it's the most amorphous of all of them, so they're able to make it seem like it's a nonstop existential threat. Of course, that is climate change. Here is John Kerry talking about how if we don't do something fast, and most likely that means you getting less stuff while he eats his foie gras on his private plane that his wife owns, even though he lied about that under oath to the Congress, if we don't do something fast, the world's going to explode.
No, but you're an advocate of carbon capture.
I am an advocate of carbon capture because the scientists are telling us we cannot get to net zero 2050 if we don't have some carbon capture. It is a job creator. It will make life healthier for people because we're not putting pollution into the atmosphere. It'll make countries safer because they can produce their own energy, not have the threat of interruptions in the Gulf, Persian Gulf, or having to send your young people off to fight and die somewhere because it's going to support your energy source. The world will be safer, cleaner, healthier, without any question, and there'll be a better economy with many more jobs created in these new sectors. This is the largest economic transformation that we're looking at in the history of humankind since the Industrial Revolution. And there will be enormous numbers of jobs created in this. There already are. So I think the trend has started. The issue is, will we move fast enough to avoid the worst consequences of the climate crisis?
John Kerry, a man who loves the climate so much, he's starting to look like a tree. Okay, just first off, do you want to follow him? The scientists are telling him stuff, guys. Do you want to follow him into this giant economic changeover? Is that what you want to do? Is it possible that the scientists have been wrong about, wasn't there a thing that involved masks? I can't quite remember it, and injecting people with stuff that wasn't really tested, that we followed the science on, and we separated from each other and didn't go to funerals for grandmas for. Wasn't that kind of recent? So we might be a little hesitant to follow the scientists or follow a lifelong politician who's really accomplished nothing in his life other than becoming worth a couple $100 million because he married the heir to the Heinz ketchup fortune. Do you know that? He's half ketchup. He's half tree, half ketchup, the guy. But I don't believe him about the climate. And even if I did believe him about the climate, the idea that I would want to hand over any of the autonomy over my life to a guy like him would be a problem, because what he is more than anything else is what all progressives seem to be at this point, which are, they are absolute ideologues, right? And from top down, we see this everywhere. So check this out. This is video of the climate advisor to the United Nations. Her name is Aisha Siddiqua. And here she is blaming white men for climate change, and you're not gonna believe who we have to protect. It's a good one, and we're all gonna get one in our house. Watch this.
And I say this because the climate crisis is not past. The climate crisis is not a result of natural disasters. It's actually man-made. It's a result of...
I'll say it again, because I think they missed it.
The climate crisis is man-made. And it's not just man-made, it's white man-made. It is a result of capitalism, years of colonialism, years of racial oppression. And so, if you want to get involved, the way that we save our planet is when we protect the most vulnerable communities among us. And this includes Black trans women. This includes Indigenous peoples. And this is why it includes children and young folk. Because when we protect them, then we can protect everybody else.
You know that scene in Billy Madison when he's doing the test at the end and the principal is like, what you just said is the stupidest thing I have ever heard. We are all dumber for having heard it. May God have mercy on your soul. Well, that's what just happened. Yes, it is white men who have caused climate change, and we must, the only way to stop climate change is somehow protecting black trans women. Every household should have a black trans woman to protect from climate change. We're all gonna, Connor, you're the whitest guy in here. Phoenix, punch him in honor of climate change. It's all completely idiotic. But this woman has a fairly high-level climate-related job at the United Nations. We've got some tweets from her, if you didn't think that was stupid enough. Here she goes. I am not an activist. I am a killjoy. I am what reminds white supremacy of its present-day wretchedness. It is my job to make clear that in the process of and consuming, that in the process of killing and consuming non-white, non-male bodies, the white man has brought life as we know it to the verge of extinction. Jesus, Connor. And another one from her. The white man sits at the highest level of power in the world, the same way he has killed, looted, and abused black and brown people for profit to have the earth. White supremacy would rather take everything and everyone, including white people, than give up its hold. First off, I just want to say I like white people. I've always liked white people. I enjoy being around white people. You know, they drink a lot of light beer. It's not my thing, but like, I have no problem with white people. I don't even mind dancing with white people, okay? It's awkward, it's a little stilted. No one's really sure what to do, but it is what it is, okay? But white people are not causing climate change, you dullard. And the fact that this woman has any power as it relates to anything, the United Nations, by the way, it has no real authority. We keep thinking that the United Nations, that the World Economic Forum, these things have no power unless our countries decide to give them the power, right? Like, we have laws here in the United States. It's why they're always attacking our Constitution and our Bill of Rights, because they know if they can erase those, then we would have to bow down to some centralized UN, World Economic Forum, globalist power. But if you think that that woman, you don't like white people, white people are just fine, you know? Didn't like Friends, but it wasn't because they were all white. It just wasn't that funny. Anyway, what they're doing with climate right now is the exact same thing they did with COVID, right? We've been through it, but we cannot forget. Here's a white guy who I don't like. I'm fairly certain he's actually a trans woman. It's the guy up in Canada. And remember what he was doing during COVID?
In general, how eager everyone is to get through this, get back to normal, get to a better summer, end this pandemic once and for all. Everyone wants that, and we know the way to do that is to get as many people vaccinated.
I want to end today by speaking directly to kids once again. And I know almost half of kids across this country have gotten their vaccine from ages 5 to 12. We need to get more, so please ask your parents if you can get vaccinated. Getting vaccinated protects yourself, protects your family, protects your grandparents, protects vulnerable people, but it also supports our frontline workers who are working incredibly hard. Our nurses and doctors and people in hospitals who are dealing with a rise in cases.
I'm gonna curse. Can we bleep on the fly? We can't bleep on the fly. I mean, he is one sick motherfucker and he should be in jail. That he was pleading to children during COVID to talk to their parents how they should be injected with stuff. The parents didn't know what the hell was going on. The kids certainly didn't know what was going on. It all turned out to be absolute bullshit. This is the same guy who was closing bank accounts of truckers who were protesting because they wanted to open up their country. He was also closing churches and a whole bunch more. Like, he is just profoundly evil. But the reason I'm retreading that clip for you is because we've been through this thing with the crises, and we should stop giving awful people power over us. John Kerry should have no power over you. Justin Trudeau should have no power over you. And do you remember how absolutely stupid it got in New York City during COVID? This is socialist former mayor Bill de Blasio. And if this wasn't this might have been the dumbest moment of COVID. That may be impossible to actually quantify, but this might have been it.
Free fries when you get vaccinated? I got vaccinated. You're saying I could get this? These delicious fries? Wait a minute. But there's also a burger element to this. Let me check with Bill Neidhart. Is it too early in the day to eat a burger?
No.
This could be breakfast?
Okay.
I want you to look at this and think about, again, some people love hamburgers, some don't. Really want to respect all ways of life. But if this is appealing to you, just think of this when you think of vaccination. Vaccination. I'm getting a very good feeling. about vaccination right this moment.
I told you we were getting an inflatable clown because for me to analyze all of these clips, it's belittling to you at some level, right? It's all so dumb, and my audience is not dumb. I know most shows have dumb people watching, but you guys aren't dumb. So what can I add there when I'm talking about Bill de Blasio with the French fries and why you should get the COVID thing? So I'm just going to punch this clown. I'm going to punch this clown, okay? That was not an endorsement of violence. That actually was, wow, I feel good. And that thing didn't even pop back up. I mean, that was in no way an endorsement of violence. Do not, yes, are progressives clowns? Yes, but you should not be out there punching progressives. I know they always want to punch Nazis and they think everyone's a Nazi and that's a problem. That was just the best way I can do this show. It was really, that was pure entertainment, people. It was not an endorsement of violence. But let's continue, because on CNN yesterday, they've started to realize that people are not happy with all of this nonsense. And check this out. They're talking about how people were pissed about being forced to be vaccinated and left in their houses and locked down and all the rest of it. And that, my God, maybe some people in Washington should think about things a little bit differently.
With them. Well, on his point that Biden could present a greater threat to democracy, I wasn't really surprised to hear that. I think sometimes here in Washington, we underestimate or don't really understand the full scope, unless you travel the country, how much people felt deeply aggrieved by having to take the vaccine to re-enter society, to go back.
Yes, people felt deeply aggrieved to have to take a vaccine. It wasn't even a vaccine, that's one thing. You were forcing people to do it. You were giving them French fries if they did it because they didn't want to do it. You were forcing frontline doctors and nurses, who you said were the indisplaceable people and the people that had to be, they were the, by God, we've got to save these people. And then if they didn't want to get the thing, you were firing them. It was all absolutely insane, but it's incredible. My God, people in Washington, D.C. and then CNN are suddenly realizing that people, I don't know, kind of want autonomy over their body. Who is it that said, my body, my choice? There was somebody that once said that. And of course, what they were doing on that clip right there, they were analyzing RFK Jr. because he's starting to gain some steam again, right? Because there's people that are frustrated about COVID stuff. There are people who want, you know, just sort of there that are just somewhere between, let's say, Trump and Biden, that want something a little less polarizing, regardless of how you feel about either one of those particularly. And of course, what's also happening is that people are realizing we have massive problems, and not just the border. And it's not just the war and the COVID coming back. It's not just all of that. It's that there are actual problems with our life expectancy, with reproduction, with the amount of antidepressants we're on and more. Here's Tucker Carlson on that.
I just am worried that we're missing the obvious signs. And the obvious signs are reproduction, life expectancy, sobriety. If you have a society where people just can't deal with being sober, don't want to have children, and are dying younger, you have an extremely sick, you have a suicidal society, okay? And I'm not even blaming anyone for, I'm just saying objectively that is true. And the measure of a health of your society is the number of children that you have and how well they do. It's super simple. That's the next generation. We all die. And what replaces us? And if you don't care, then you're suicidal, and maybe other things too. But that's all I'm saying. So what happened to South Korea? Like, why can't anyone answer the question? They're great people. They're rich. They have all these advantages. They're on the cutting edge of every American. For a foreign country, they're more American than maybe any other country other than Canada. And like, what happened?
But the question really is, so what's happening to the United States? We're going to show you some numbers that explain a little bit of what he's talking about, but we know this. There is a massive push by the media and what's happening on TikTok and elsewhere to tell young people to delay when they get married, if they get married at all, to not have kids, to just live for themselves, all of those things. We know, especially post-COVID, rates of alcoholism increased hugely, that rates of drug use and antidepressants. It's something like 12% of American adults are now on SSRIs. It's like, what is actually happening? I mean, something is, and that's why I always say it's a spiritual problem that we're all dealing with more than a political problem. We've got some info from Macro Trends on U.S. life expectancy over the last 24 years, and you can see basically from 2000 to 2013, it was going up pretty steadily. Then there was a slight decrease between 2013 and 2020, and then it is ticking up the tiniest bit in the last couple of years. That may be because so many people died from all sorts of reasons as it pertained to COVID, not necessarily COVID itself, but the rate has significantly dropped off, right? Look at that first 13 years there. It's all going up. That's good. People are living a little bit longer, late 70s, even into their early 80s. Then it kind of decreases a tiny bit, and now it's somewhat stagnant. That is a little bit of a problem. The chart that we're showing on the other side over there is general fertility rates, which is declining across all states. That's per 1,000 US women from 15 to 44 years old from 1990 to 2010. And you can see that there's an enormous decline from 2006 to 2020. So what is happening here? We're dying a little bit younger, and also women's ability to have children seems to be decreasing. And then let's just show you one other. This is a chart from the National Institute of Health on national drug overdose deaths among all ages from 99 to 2021. So this is the middle of COVID, right? So there's an incredible increase over time here. I don't even have to get into those numbers from you. But if you were to look back at, say, roughly 2015, you had about 52,000 deaths. And then it's doubled in only about 8 years. Or no, in only about 6 years to 21. These are huge problems, and that barely gets into what has happened over the last 3 years as it pertains to drug use and alcoholism and everything else. And that's just a symptom of something that is going on with all of us. And it's partly because of this information war, and people are worried about the future of the country, and they've made a whole bunch of young people anxious over their gender and the fact that they tell them that the world is going to end in 12 years, which is what AOC said 6 years ago, but I'm pretty sure she knows the world is going to continue 6 years from now. So because I have RFK Jr. in studio later today, we thought it would be a nice way of getting to the close here. I'll show you a clip about him talking about how our country is sick and we better figure out a way to address some of these real issues.
I think he needs to show Americans that he, you know, a lot of these decisions are the products of complex and nuanced thought, and those thoughts need to be articulated to the American people in a way that we all support him. And I do not think that that's happening now. Our children's lives are dependent on that 3 o'clock a.m. call, and we need to know that we have a president who can wake up in the middle of the night and who is on his feet and thinking about those things. And I think a lot of Americans have lost confidence in that.
Okay, so Joe Biden is sick, right? Something is not right with Joe Biden. And when we go through what we just talked about for the last 50 minutes or so between war and the climate agenda and the border and the drugs and the crime and the depression and the lower life expectancy, it's like we could use somebody at the top who is a little bit sharper, right? And that is the interesting spot that we have been left in right now. We're about to do a retread of the last election, which most people, even if you are like completely on board the Trump train and everything else, and as I keep saying, I am likely voting for Donald Trump, you could be completely on board that, but I think most honest people could still recognize, like, there's a problem here. There's a sort of meta problem around that we're just repeating that thing. Does anyone think that's right? And these people of this certain age and everything else. So I'm going to dive into, I'm not going to do a ton of issue-based stuff with RFK. I really want to get to the heart of what we've talked about here, of how we fix the deep things that are happening in the United States of America, not just the kind of superficial things or the media wars or anything else. So we'll be doing that later today, right in studio. By the way, guys, my full interview with Ben Shapiro, I think you've heard about that guy, is up across platforms right now, ad-free at rubinreport.locals.com. People of the internet live at 1 p.m. Oh, no, sorry. Because I've got RFK here, people of the internet will be at 4 p.m. Eastern. Thank you for the correction. And we've got a post-game show in about 30 seconds, rubinreport.locals.com. As they say in Boston, adios.
I've spent more time with President Xi of China than any world leader has. For 24 hours of private meetings with him.
More time with Xi Jinping than any other head of state over 68 hours with him.
More time with Xi Jinping, leader of China, than any other world leader has. Over 76 hours. They keep meticulous hours and times. I think we're up to 85 hours, as he and I. 91 hours of just one-on-one conversations. I met alone with him, just he and I, and a simultaneous interpreter, 68 times, 68 hours. 68 times, more than 68 hours.
Thanks for tuning in to The Rubin Report. You can watch the show live every weekday at 11 a.m. Eastern and 8 a.m. Pacific on Rumble, Locals, and YouTube. Don't forget to rate, review, share, and subscribe to this podcast. And you can join me for the post-game wrap-up every day after the show at rubinreport.locals.com.